Friday, 20th July, Rabbi Menachem Zeltzer, there's internal hatred amongst us. Why?
So I thought to myself, well, what are we going to talk about? And I said, if we're going into Tisha B'Av, so the what better topic can we discuss than the question of sinah? And let's come at it from a little bit of a different angle. Where does it start? Where did it begin? Okay. And it came to pass in those days, Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grew up, he went out to his brothers, and he saw their burden and their suffering. Rashi adds that Moshe's eyes and his heart took in the pain of his fellow Jews. Not one Jews yet, but of his fellow co-religionists, however you want to be magdarit. Moshe sees a mitzri striking a Hebrew, a guy is hitting one of his brothers. He looks here, he looks there. He sees there's nobody there, and Moshe kills the mitzri, hits his body in the sand. This is the first recorded act done by the little boy rescued from the floating basket in the Nile. So I'm first to explain that when the pasuk writes Yifan, it means Moshe looked to the other Jews who were there. He saw that nobody was coming to the aid of his fellow Jew. He looked at the mitzvah to see if anybody would complain about what the overseer was doing, and he saw nobody was going to do that. Moshe then realized he's the only one who cares enough about what's happening to act, and he saved the Jew from being killed. Moshe goes out on the second day, Vihine, and behold, he sees the Jew striking his fellow Jew. Side point, when Moshe sees a guy hitting a Jew, the Torah does not use the word Vihine. That's what it uses when a Jew hits another Jew. The word Vihine connotes surprise, the unexpected. You see a Jew hitting another Jew, that's unexpected, that's surprise. You see a guy, not a surprise. When Moshe sees a mitzvah hitting a Jew, there's nothing surprising about that at all. But when he sees a Jew hitting another Jew, it's not a surprise, it's a shock. It's mamash a shock. That's not supposed to happen. And Moshe says to the sinner, Lama Sakariyacha, why are you hitting your friend? Replies the man, who made you an officer and a judge among us? Do you intend to kill me like you killed the mitzvah yesterday? And Moshe became frightened and he said, Achei noida adaba, there are people who know what I did. After this power heard what happened, he wanted to kill Moshe. Moshe ran away to Midian, where he sat by the well. Here is where Moshe will meet Zipporah. He saved her sisters from the local people who were angry at Yisrael for becoming from. Okay, now let's make some seder. The first thing he went out and he saw a mitzri hitting a Jew. Moshe responds by killing the mitzri. On the second day he sees two Jews fighting. He reacts. And because of his reaction, Moshe is forced to run away. He arrives in Midian, where he finds out the locals are starting up with Yisrael's daughters, and he reacts again. It's clear from all this that Moshe Rabbeinu possesses a personality that reacts. If something wrong is happening, he's going to stand up and do something about it. If there's an injustice going on, Moshe Rabbeinu cannot stand by and watch it happen. If a guy is hitting a Jew, Moshe will destroy the guy. He's going to stop it. If there's two Yidden fighting, he's going to stop it. He cannot abide injustice. If there's something wrong, Moshe Rabbeinu will do something about it. Let's return to the second day when Moshe went out. The Gemara tells us, as does Rashi, who are the two Jews struggling with one another? They are Dasan and Avira, brothers from the tribe of Reuven. The Medrash tells us they were fighting to the death. One brother intended to kill the other brother. This is very strange. How often do we hear of two Jewish brothers who want to literally kill one another? It doesn't happen. We don't hear figuratively, okay, but literally, mamish killing, you don't hear it that often. The next thing we know, the king knows what happened. How does the king know what happened? Because Dasan Avira betrayed Moshe to Paro. This is a terrible thing. Moshe separated the two of them so they wouldn't kill one another after saving Dasan for beating up by the mitzri the day before. And instead of being grateful to him for saving Dasan's life, they betray him to the king and try to have him killed. The same people. We are informed by the Torah. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu sees and experiences on the second day that he leaves the palace and steps out into the world of his brothers. Mamash, he just leaves the palace. He just comes into the world of Klal Yisrael, and the first thing he sees are two Jewish people beating each other up to the death, and when he tries to save them, they go and they tell the king, this is what he did. That's his introduction to Klal Yisrael. Unfortunately, we find a similar theme running through Jewish history with traitors in our midst. Self-hatred, internal hatred, the self-hating Jew. I don't have to tell you about the phenomenon. The question is, where it begins? What's the source? That's the shayla. There are self-hating Jews. There are people in around the world today who fight against Herzl right now. Recently, 2018, a woman living in Berlin made a public announcement that she rejects the right of return what the State of Israel offers every Jew in the world until such time as there will be a similar law for Palestinians. I don't know if you know this, but the overwhelming majority of BDS leadership is comprised of Jewish people. Of course, we shouldn't forget about the leftists living in Israel who are always helping Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. But how can we be surprised by any of this? Why are we surprised? What? The BDS leadership is Jewish? What are you surprised about? The Torah makes a point of telling me this. One Moshe Rabbeinu goes out the second day. This is what he sees. It's not a chiddush. It didn't start now. It didn't start today. It didn't start in 2018. It started when Moshe Rabbeinu left the palace on the second day. The Torah makes a point of pointing this out by telling us what happened the second day. Moshe went out to his brothers, only to meet two self-hating Jews who were willing to sell out the person who saved them to the king. The question is great. Why do people do this? What motivates Jewish people to betray their fellow Jews? Why do people join forces with those who despise us? We see pictures of Victoria Carter traveling to Iran to engage with our enemies, to publicly discuss the destruction of Eretz Yisrael. I'll tell you myself, Bididi Avuvd, I was here in London a few months ago speaking, and I spoke, I gave a speech at Stamford Hill, and a few hours before the speech, the person organizing the speech calls me up, she says, Rabbi Saltz, I have to tell you that I just heard the Torah character is going to be protesting against you in front of your speech. I said, me? What did I do? And they said, they looked there, they found you, and they found out that you did an event at the Knesset 4 years ago. So they're going to come. I said, you know, I'm in very good company. They also protested against Aaron Liebsteinman when he came, when they did an event after he passed away. They protested against him too. So I'm in very good company. Baruch Hashem, you know, Aaron Liebsteinman. You understand? So I did an event at the Knesset, so we're going to come and protest against you. What's going on over here? Well, Klai Yisrael, how is this even possible? To go to Iran? Okay. Now, this is this problem that we're describing here with Dustin and Aviro. This is the original source of groups like J Street, who claimed to work for Eretz Yisrael, but in fact they were completely against us. Right? I don't know if you're familiar with this. When they appointed David Friedman to be the ambassador at Eretz Yisrael, so he got in big trouble because he had compared J Street to the Kapos. He said they're worse than Kapos. So when they had a hearing, in a Senate hearing, he had to retract. He had to apologize. He didn't. Obviously, this is what he said. You know. It's true. These people are mamish self-hating Jews. What's going on over here? But there's such a serious problem. It's so ingrained that Moshe Rabbeinu is already shown this problem on his second day of going out to Klal Yisrael. It's not a new thing. During the time of Hanukkah, there were a significant number of Jews who became Hellenists, identified with the Greeks against their fellow Jews. Even worse, the original Christians were Jews. Things were so troublesome, Chazal went so far as to enact a bracha for this terrible scourge. The bracha of Elamashinim Adi Sikva Ishmael Esrei is a very unusual bracha. Chazal are calling the wrath of God down on those who slander their brothers, begging Hashem to punish them speedily and to destroy them completely. This is what Chazal writes. May Hashem uproot, break, destroy, and humble those who do wrong with evil intent speedily in our days. What a bracha. The bracha is referring to our enemies from within. The Anshei Knesset Gedolah instituted Shemoneh Esrei when the Jewish people returned to Eretz Yisrael from Bava, because as the Rambam writes, the people couldn't speak the language anymore and Chazal had to give them a formula to use for prayer. The original Shemoneh Esrei had 18 brachas, yet we have 19 brachas in our Shemoneh Esrei. Why? Because in the days of Rabban Gamliel, things were so bad and there were people who were trying to turn the nation away from Hashem. Says the Rambam, Rabbi Gamliel saw this problem, which was greater than all of our other needs, and that we were suffering from enemies both within and without. And Rabbi Gamliel and the Bez then added another bracha to Shemoneh Esrei, in which we ask Hashem to destroy the heretics and the slanderers. And this was established in the Tefillah, so everyone should know and be familiar with this bracha. One could ask, if there are 19 brachas and not 18 brachas, why is it called Shemoneh Esrei? It should be called Tshah Esrei. Right? We could suggest that perhaps this is due to the fact that Rabbi Gamliel was not proud of the fact that we had to add this bracha. To add such a bracha to Klal Yisrael, to the Shemoneh Esrei, is not something to be proud of. A bracha discussing traitors, a bracha discussing slanderers is not something to get up and say, oh, by the way, I'm adding another bracha. You know why? Because we have this major problem inside us. Maybe there's a hope that one day we can take this bracha and we can remove it from Shemoneh Esrei. Let's go back to the second day. Moshe Rabbeinu comes across two Jewish people are struggling with one another, fighting to the death. He breaks up the fight. These two men, Dasan and Aviram, are going to keep on appearing in the Torah time and time again. We are going to see these people. They are going to be major players in Chumash, major players in Jewish history. We're going to find them. In Shemais alone, the two of them appear no less than three times. Who are these people? What is their problem? Yisrael tells Moshe, this is after Hashem commands him to return to Mitzrayim to rescue the Yidid, Lech L'Shalom, go in peace. And Hashem says to Moshe, go back to Mitzrayim, all those who want to kill you have since died. Says Rashi, who are those people? None other than Dasan and Aviram. Wait a second, they're not dead. We'll keep on hearing about them for the next, who knows how long. Rashi explains, they weren't dead, they became poor, and that is like dying. After this, Moshe returns to Mitzrayim. He spoke with Paro, who responds by making things worse now for Klal Yisrael. He tells Moshe he doesn't believe him when he says he wants to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim for 3 days to serve Hashem. And from now on, the Jewish people will now no longer be provided with raw material to make bricks. The guards of the Jewish people see the state they were in. And they realize, wait a second, Moshe came to Paro and now it's worse. Paro, now, until now, they were giving us material to make bricks. And now that Moshe Rabbeinu Aaron came to Paro, now it's going to be worse. So what's going on? The guards stood outside the palace. They encountered Moshe and Aaron and they said to them, this is what the guards, Jewish guards, say to Moshe and Aaron when they're leaving the palace, let God see and let God judge. You have made us abhorrent in the eyes of Paro and his servants, and you have given them a sword in their hands to kill us. The two men who confronted Moshe and Aaron when they left the king's palace are none other than Dasan and Aviram. We will see them again a few lines, a few more times in Meshalach, and of course with Korach and his followers. Why does the Torah need to tell us the terrible things that they say? If the Dalit is missing from the name of Dasan, the entire Sefer Torah is going to be puzzled. Why do we need this for? Why are they part of the Torah? What are they adding for us? What are they giving us? Why are we focusing on this? Nothing in the Torah is wasted. Nothing is extra. That means it's very important. It's vital. It's crucial. Dasan and Aviram are coming to give us something crucial. What? At Yam Suf, Klal Yisrael is in terrible danger. Surrounded by the Mitzrim, the ocean. And of course, here comes Dasan and Aviram to complain. And they say to Moshe, is this why you took us out of Mitzrayim? There aren't enough graves in Mitzrayim. We needed to come here to die in the desert. Dasan and Aviram started the ball rolling. And we suffer from what they did until today. How much proof do we need to prove that Yerushalayim is a Jewish city? And that our ties go back to the beginning of time? You need a lot of proof. It's such an obvious thing. It's such an elementary thing. Archaeologists are constantly finding coins, Jewish coins from thousands of years ago in the vicinity of Har HaBayis. It's a fascinating thing. No archaeologist has yet to find one Palestinian coin. Never happened. And yet, hundreds of countries publicly support the idea that Yerushalayim is not a Jewish city. Where does this falsehood begin? It's Mamash false, it's Sheker. Hundreds of countries will look you in the eye and lie. What's going on? It started with Dasan and Aviram. They began. This is all began with Dasan and Aviram. Listen to what they're saying. Moshe and Aaron took us out of Mitzrayim because there aren't enough graves for us there. Shechem. Why don't the people get up and scream? Why don't they say something? Why don't they throw rocks at them? No, it's silent. Everybody lets them say what they want. They get away with saying outrageous things. And thus begins a situation in the world where people stand up and make statements which are false. Get away with it. It all begins with Dasan and Aviram. Years ago, there was a group called the Cambridge Five. I'm standing here in London. I'm sure you're familiar with this. The Cambridge Five comprised of great intellectuals who would go on to not only betray England while spying for communist Russia, but to betray the West, to hand over tremendous amounts of sensitive material to the Russians. People like Kim Philby, Guy Burgess, Anthony Blunt. Books have been written about these people. Films have been made about the spying from Britain's most esteemed educational institution. You can say what you want about these people. Some they try to romanticize what they did. But at the end of the day, they were traitors. That's what they were. One book that was written about the Cambridge Five suggested that every single member of the group came from wealthy upper-class families, yet the families themselves were dysfunctional, and that could produce traitors. Who cares? On the surface, one could suggest that Dustin and Aviram came from a dysfunctional family background. After all, the Torah tells me, they were locked in a fight to the death when Moshe Rabbeinu intervened and stopped them from killing one another. Two brothers wanted to kill each other. Clearly, there's something wrong with these people. Maybe they came from a dysfunctional background. A family, the father, the mother, who knows? I have a problem saying the Torah is telling me about people from dysfunctional homes. That's the Vard, and that's... There's got to be a message here to me from Dustin and Avir. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu meets these people on the second day is happening for a reason. He could have met so many other people, right? No, but it's mamash, it jumps out at you, right? Think about it. Like, out of all the people in the world, there were millions of Jews. Who does he meet? Dustin and Aviram. Why? What is the Torah telling me over here? The Torah is being chadish on you. The Torah is being sign. It's not stam. There's a reason the Torah is telling me this. Comes along Hashem Yishmael with the following question. Why is it so important that Paro should know that Hashem is Hashem, right? And you're going to know that Hashem is Hashem. Why is it so important, says Hashem Yishmael, that Paro should know that Hashem is Hashem? Who cares if Paro knows? The Torah keeps on writing. This is happening, so you should know that I am Hashem. Why is that important? Moshe Rabbeinu himself says when he takes leave of Paro for the last time, we're going out with our sons and our daughters and our animals, and you will also give us animals to bring us sacrifices to Hashem. Why do I need Paro's animals as sacrifices? Explains the Shem Yishmuel. And this is the Yisoy. The blasphemy of Egypt impacted on the Jewish people. Jewish people were being influenced by Paro's rejection of Hashem time and again. When Paro said, "Who is Hashem?" it influenced the Jewish people. As much as we don't want to be influenced by the things we hear and the things we see, it does impact on us. Another question from the Shem Yishmuel. How did Dosan and Aviram have the arrogance to speak like they did to Moshe and Aaron? Where does it come from? All of Mitzrayim knew that Moshe and Aaron were saintly people. They walked into the palace through the lion's enclosure. Nobody could touch them. They're picking up snakes. And Dosan and Aviram have the arrogance to speak to them like that? We can explain it the following way. It was very important for Mitzrayim to recognize Hashem. In fact, the intent of all the Makos was to subdue Paroi and the Mitzrayim. It's not that Hashem needs the power to say, "I believe in Hashem." All the nations of the world have nothing before Hashem. That's not the reason. When Paro admitted that there was a God, a Jewish God, and when Yisro admitted that there was a God, it was all for the sake of the Jewish people. So that the Jewish people would be able to achieve the ability to stand humbly before Hashem, knowing that their will means nothing in the presence of Hashem's will. What Paro says is for me. What Yisro says is for me. It's not for Yisro, it's not for Paro, it's for me. It's not for the Mitzvah, it's for me. Explain the Shem Yishmuel. This is a form of conduct that accompanies us throughout Golus, because the arrogance of the nations who ask us all the time, "Where is your God? Where is your God?" It takes its toll on us, psychologically. It has an effect on us. For thousands of years, we've been hearing this from the nations as they kill us. The Nazis put us in the gas station and say, "Where is your God? Where is your God?" The Spanish take us to the Inquisition and they burn us. They say, "Where is your God?" The Catholics drag us through the streets of Poland. They say, "Where is your God?" It has an effect on you. It has an effect on Klal Yisrael. Says the Shem Yishmua, just like the chutzpah of Dasan and Aviram became more intense near the end of the Galus of Mitzrayim, where did they learn it from? The Shem Yishmua says, you know where they learned it from? They learned their chutzpah from Paro's chutzpah. So too, as we ourselves come closer to the final redemption, the Shem Yishmua was writing this, by the way, in the 1930s. He was writing this. You understand, he is mamish like a Navi. He wrote this in 1930s. As we come closer to the final redemption, there will be a great manifestation of Jewish people speaking out against God. This is what the Shem Yishmua wrote in the 1930s. As we come closer to the final redemption, there will be a great movement of Jewish people speaking out against Hashem. Because they will be influenced by a world that rejects the Jewish people and rejects the God of Israel. Because before the light will burst through, the darkness intensifies. As the Zohar writes, Kadrusa de Tzafra, the darkness of morning, the most intense darkness of all, is the darkness which directly precedes the dawn. From the words of the Shem Yishmuel, it really seems as if the world is following Hashem's script. How on earth can anybody possibly claim the Harabais wasn't always the Jewish people? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. There's so much proof. How could anybody get up there and claim it didn't happen? Shem Yishmuel called it, 1930s. How on earth could anybody possibly deny the history of David HaMelech and the Beis HaMikdash and everything went on in Yerushalayim for thousands of years? The Shem Yishmuel called it in 1930s. Unless we understand that we are in the times of Mashiach, and that in the time of Mashiach, chutzpah will reign. And then yes, people can speak with impunity and in arrogance. And they'll be capable of lying, of what happened, and they could say, you know, the Arabs were there the whole time, there was no Beis HaMikdash, and nothing belongs to you, and it never did. They can say it because, yes, as Mashiach comes, the chutzpah intensifies, and the sheker intensifies. And when the President of America wants to set the record straight and actually say, you know, the truth about Yerushalayim, the whole world goes crazy. Why are you going crazy? He told you the truth. What's your problem? So we're living in a time where anyone can say what they want about Yerushalayim, or they can say what they want about anything. But according to the Shem Yishmuel, what does that mean? It just means that redemption is on the way. He's translating it. What's happening? This movement of lying, this movement of arrogance, is Betzim a proof that the redemption is on his way. And so said, so prophesied the Shem Yishmuel in the 1930s. Continues the Shem Yishmuel. It is my opinion that the struggle of the nations versus Klal Yisrael is a manifestation of the war of Gog and Magog, and it's taking on the form of the entire world against us in a war of words and chutzpah. And one of the main problems to come out of all this is the chutzpah, the arrogance of the world impacting on the Jewish people among the Jews, the weaker element among us. That's the main problem that comes out. When the world talks with chutzpah against Klal Yisrael, the weaker element. Again, this is going back, this is a parallel. Paro talked with chutzpah against Hashem, and Dasan Aviram was the result. The world talks with chutzpah against Hashem, and the weaker elements among us turn and stab us in the back. It's mamash a parallel of what happened then. And when you have this arrogance in the world, then you have BDS, and you have J Street, and you have the Notori Karakter, and groups in Israel like Shovrim Shtika, B'Tselem. And all this is part of a process leading up to great things. Because the degree of betrayal that has existed within the Jewish people may be unparalleled. No other nation has suffered from such self-loathing. So much betrayal. There's no other nation where people, their own people, have turned around and stabbed themselves in the back. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? Have some self-respect. Have some self-pride. Where's your loyalty? Shem Yishmuel says, no, this is the way it's always been. From the second day that Moshe went out to his people, that's where it all started. It's a direct outcome of when the Goyim are arrogant, that Kodesh Baruch Hu, the weaker elements among us, they fall in line with that. This arrogance that we find within our midst, continues Shem Yishmuel, it doesn't come from us. It's not inborn from us. It's coming from the outside world having an effect on us. It's like Paro had an effect on Dasan and Aviram. Says the Shem Yishmuel, and the good God should forgive them. And may it be His will that v'shavu vanim legvulam, that all be humble before the Torah, including Paro, whose animals we will offer on the altar, because Paro will also reach a stage we recognize the Hashem and His greatness and our greatness. When that happens, the self-loathing of the Jewish people will come to an end. How beautiful that will be when the people who hate themselves lay down their weapons. Can you imagine? No more talk of Jewish people turning against their brothers. The sight of Jewish people going to soldiers and filming them to get them in trouble in the world opinion. Like, this is where it's coming from. No doubt you wondered about this. How can any Jew do this? This is the answer. It all began in Mitzrayim with Dasa and Avira. You cannot imagine how many Jews travel from outside the country, from around the world, to demonstrate with Arabs. You can't imagine it. You have no idea what goes on. The depths of self-loathing and betrayal are simply astounding. In other nations, if people acted this way, they'd be shot by their countrymen. Yeah. We watch as Jews stick knives into their own skin and draw blood. It's an unbelievable thing. One day this will all come to an end. The Gemara in Brachas tells us that Rav Gamliel asked the following question of the Sanhedrin and Yavne after destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Is there someone, he asked, who could compose a 19th bracha against the slanderers, the haters, the traitors? The lot fell on a Tana by the name of Shmuel HaKotan. What do we know about Shmuel HaKotan? The most important thing we know about him is from a Mishnah in Avos. When he writes, Binfol oivecha al tismach. When your enemy falls, do not be happy, and when he stumbles, do not let your heart be full of joy. From his words, it seems clear that Shmuel HaKotan worked on himself to ensure that there was no hatred. Not even an iota of hatred in his neshama for anyone else, to the point that he would not be happy even if his greatest enemy should fall. Rabbi Gamliel said that the brachas of Shemot Esrei have to be completely pure. So he found the one person who was able to compose such a bracha. May Hashem uproot, break, destroy, and humble those who do wrong with evil intent speedily in our days. Why do we write this? Out of a sense of pain, necessity, but without hatred. Shmuel HaKotan was the only one who could write this without hatred. The only person who could actually write such a bracha was Shmuel HaKotan, who had made eradicating such hatred the mission of his life. Right now, we are dealing with people causing severe suffering to the Jewish people. I myself, as I said, was a recipient of these people. I myself gave a speech in Stafford Hill, and outside a guy was screaming, go learn. Go do something important. Why are you wasting your time? What's wrong with you? Rav Kook writes that it's possible for a Jewish person who has a holy neshama to utterly destroy the holiness and sanctity of his soul. It's a very severe thing, he writes. He says, Bessem saying it's possible for a Jewish person to corrupt his soul, to corrode his soul to the point where it destroys the neshama. Wow. If a person does, he says, this is what Rav Kook writes, if a person does or says causes harm to the Jewish people, to Eretz Yisrael, then he or she has lost the sanctity of their neshama. There's a point of no return, a point where neshama becomes the essence of evil. And from that point on, the neshama stops having the din of the Yisrael. This is a tremendous, tremendous line. The fact that Dasan and Avirma introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu from the moment he leaves the palace shows him that these kind of problems are going to exist among Klal Yisrael for the rest of time. One more idea, says the Maharal. When a people have two such holy figures, like a Moshe and like an Aaron, then they have to have two opposite figures, like a Dasan and like an Aviram, to balance things out, to give us a choice. We always have to have a choice. Dasan and Aviram are there to provide Bechira, a choice that will be part of our lives for all time, a choice the Jewish people have to make every single day until today, and we have people choosing the right way, and we have people choosing the wrong way. But it's a sign, says the Shem Yishvor, that Mashiach is mamash coming closer, because the closer we get to Mashiach, the more the chutzpah, the more the arrogance, the more the lies, and the more it all becomes greater and greater and greater, and the weaker elements do it more and more and more. As the more close we get, the more it's a sign of the Mashiach is about to come. What about us? Very nice. We don't go BDS and we don't film the soldiers. That's not what we do. So how does this impact us? So I'm just going to give us one little thing to take. Okay, Baruch Hashem, we love Klal Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, everyone in this room. loves Klal Yisrael. So what can we do over here? Okay, we're not guilty of such hatred, Baruch Hashem. So I'm just one little thing to take out over here. And I have a whole shiur I'm going to be giving in JLE. You may want to stop by on Tisha B'Av. I'm going to be talking about the power of words. People don't we underestimate the power of our words. We'll be speaking about that, about machloikis and about many things. But I want to say that if we can work on an avoida, where before we say something about somebody else, and we think, okay, what's going to be the ramification of this? It doesn't have to be a long thought, like a split second. If I say this, will this make the other person's life better? Do I need to say this thing about, again, I'm not talking about hatred, I'm not talking about this. We're not there, Baruch Hashem. Today we were attempting to understand where it all began, and why Moshe had to see it, and yes, it's going to be part of Klal Yisrael of all time. Yes, I understand now why there's the BDS, I understand why they're doing it, I get it. We're coming closer to Mashiach, beautiful. But for me, and for you, for us, where does this manifest itself? And when we talk about other people, we don't have to do that. We enjoy it so much. What's a good Shabbos meal is only geschmack if we talk about what we saw in the... Leave it. Don't talk about other people. You're right, you're not hating them. But we know what happens when we start talking about other people. We don't have to do that. We don't have to talk about other people. Let us work on ourselves. It could be the avodah this year for Tisha B'Av. To make a decision that when we want to say things about other people, not to do it. Not to talk about other people. Chafetz Chaim writes about this a lot, Barichas. Do not talk about other people, because chances are when you do, even if you start by saying that person's great, somebody else will say, no, he's not. Don't even think. Right? Right? Chafetz Chaim writes, it's the psychology of humans. He's so great. No, he's not. Did you do that? Yeah, he's not so great. No, he's not. What are you... Let us work on ourselves over here for our, again, Baruch Hashem, we're not those people. We don't have loathing, self-loathing. We don't have betrayal. But there's definitely what to work on. And for us to make that decision, that next time we're about to say something about somebody else, we don't say it. And that could be a tremendous avodah for our chelek in keeping the sinah down to Klal Yisrael. Yiratzayin, that this should be the final time I'm here before Tisha B'Av, because there won't be any more Tisha B'Av. It could be other times, right? That's what we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. We'll meet in Eretz Yisrael. It'll be wonderful. But no more Tisha B'Av. No more Tisha B'Av. It starts by the type of things that we want to talk about right now, by walking out and not talking about other people. And no more sinas chinam among us. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Good Shabbos to all. Hey.